The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly, the Premier League. We said on Thursday Liverpool would be tested by Arsenal. Then we forgot who plays in Arsenal's defence. Jurgen Klopp's men are now 7 points clear, with City moving back into second after victory at Southampton. And after talking up Spurs' title credentials, they slip up at home to Wolves. At the bottom, penalty shenanigans at Fulham almost cost them, while Burnley finally remember how to win. In the Football League, more late drama at Carrow Road as Norwich slip up. And in Scotland, Rangers want it more in the Old Firm. We'll take your questions as well. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. Greg Bukowski, nice to see you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Max.
Great. John Bruin, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Lord Kia says, with Jonathan Wilson clearly pod rusty, wouldn't it have been better to have introduced him in the final 20 minutes of the previous pod to get him going again?
Well, I had my warm-up yesterday on the warm-up.
Oh, you did? You were on the wireless yesterday.
And it was for a long time, because Barry was knackered.
Yeah. Barry isn't here, A, because he's too embarrassed to face all the predictions that he made. Arsenal finishing above Liverpool, Bournemouth being relegated, City winning the title by 15 points. But also, he was so ill yesterday that he wasn't even dour. You know, he'd gone beyond. He'd gone beyond that. Now, Jonathan, Greg is halfway through a croissant, so at some point we'd like a long answer about that includes the 1920s and Hungary and the Pope and Argentina and other books you've written about.
Okay.
Fine. Liverpool 5, Arsenal 1 then. In Premier League history, 8 teams have gone undefeated for their first 20 games of the season. 7 went on to become champions, the only exception...
Sheffield United.
In?
1901.
1899-1900. John, are you okay?
Yeah, right. So close.
You were close. John, I looked at this and I was like, oh, I think this will be, you know, a big test for Liverpool, because I don't know. Why was I thinking that?
I don't know. I didn't think it would be. Lads, it's Arsenal, you know, was the way that game panned out. Roberto Firmino's received a lot of plaudits. He's got a hat-trick, of course. The image of the game that I take away is the fact that that slaloming run past some of the worst tackling I've seen in the Premier League. And then the final, I suppose, when it comes out of the replay and it sort of pauses, there's the image, and I think it's Torreira,
yeah,
who's sliding in face forward. You know, the Phil Jones, the John Terry. Now, that is a team that doesn't know how to defend.
That second goal, well, I thought it looked like a football goal from a movie choreographed by someone who'd never watched football.
Yeah, from one or two or three. Yeah.
You know, shimmy that way and he'll fall over, shimmy that way and he'll fall over. And the first goal as well was a goal that you see on Sunday league pitches all the time, but you never see at that level where someone's just got an open goal for no reason. And Stefan Lischteiner, who I hated him for about 3 weeks, and now I just feel desperately sorry for him.
Well, I think Klopp kind of preempted this. He looked at that Arsenal defence and thought, well, okay, we could go into this game like we did at the Emirates and kind of set up a little bit more defensively. But he looked at that defence and just thought, well, what's the point? I mean, they caused Liverpool problems by in the away game. In this game, Klopp pushed both fullbacks on, and this wasn't like a lot of Liverpool performances this season, which have been well balanced. This was just, we're going to overwhelm them. And, you know, got caught early on, a little bit of fragility like you saw from Liverpool last season, but then just completely overwhelmed with the pressing. And it was done. It was done by half time. Happy days.
I think that's the interesting point as to how deliberate that was. I mean, the word Klopp used afterwards was wild, and it was wild. It was complete chaos. So, I don't know. It's can they reset and go back to how they have been playing for the City game on Thursday? Because I was watching that. I mean, it's one of the weirdest 5-1 games I've ever seen, because I'm not sure Liverpool played that well.
No.
Yeah, Arsenal were absolutely pitiful defensively. Now, obviously, Liverpool, to an extent, induced that by putting pressure on them. But every single goal was in some way a big defensive error. And not these defensive errors where, oh, yes, position's a couple of yards out. Like, really massive defensive errors. But, you're right. If Klopp's just decided, yeah, well, if we make this a free-for-all, we'll win, then fair enough. Because they did win 5-1. But if that is sort of a raggedness creeping in, I mean, the piece I wrote for the paper this morning. In that first 50 minutes, when I thought Liverpool's passing wasn't as good as it has been, was a little bit sloppy. They were giving the ball away once every 16 passes, as opposed to an average of 24 over the season. City's average over the season is once every 28 passes.
Now, I love how you watch football.
That's to an extent to do with the pace they're playing at. It's the fact they play much more direct than City. So, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think the fact it's so much lower than the season average tells you something different was going on in that game. Now, was that policy or was that just a little bit of craziness slipped in?
I don't know. Well, I'd have thought at this stage in the season, I mean, playing with that intensity, there is going to be some raggedness coming in now. But I still think the way Klopp has rotated the squad has worked better than I would have imagined, in that it's been quite seamless the way, you know, Shaqiri's come in and out for those games against sides that you maybe need to break down, and he's added that bit of creativity where pressing might not work. He's worked Fabinho into the team really well, and that's allowed Henderson, who had a lot of games at the World Cup, to kind of be rotated as well. And the season, Liverpool season, hasn't been marked out by games like this one. It's been marked out by away wins that they wouldn't have got in years gone by. I mean, they played pretty badly against Leicester very early on in the season and managed to come out with the points. They beat Crystal Palace, similar circumstances, and
they were losing at Burnley, weren't they?
Well, yeah, they were losing at Burnley, and without necessarily playing particularly well or full throttle like they did against Arsenal, they've got the points. Wolves away again, and I think it's though that they're the performances that have been why Liverpool are where they are, not because of these ones, you know, this particular one against Arsenal or in the Champions League against PSG was a similar kind of, you know, game. So I think that's where that's why it feels rather odd.
Someone on commentary said Georgie Wijnaldum should be the first name on the team sheet. Is that just someone trying to sound smart by saying someone you're not really noticing in a successful team? Mm. Because they're all, I mean, he's obviously playing well.
You could say that about a lot of the players, though. I mean, Milner, you could say he'd be the first name on the team sheet, but he's just having to rotate. I think why not?
I mean, there's
exactly. There's so many Van Dijk, you know. I think in the midfield is really interesting because there's a lot of there's players there who individually other big clubs might not be interested in them. You know, but in the collectively, when Klopp puts them out and tells them what they need to do, they become invaluable. And Wijnaldum is one, Milner is another. Fabinho looks like he's going to be that kind of player.
Well, I thought Henderson played really well when he came on and sort of calmed the game down slightly kind of ragged. He came on after an hour, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's done that in a few games this season. With 30 minutes to go, he's come on and it's not them being quite as frenetic. So this is the credit that Klopp deserves for being able to do that with those players. The three key players in Robertson, Wijnaldum and Shaqiri, who were bought from relegated clubs. No other big clubs in Europe would buy relegated players and make them do things like that. And I think his coaching is obviously so good.
You're starting to dream.
slightly, maybe, but possibly not.
John, can City learn anything from how Arsenal attacked in the first 10 minutes?
Well, I would have said City are capable of the goal that was scored by Maitland-Niles, definitely. I suppose the one thing is, the player I was going to mention as indispensable was Andy Robertson. I think when Liverpool play with the throttle fully on, the full throttle, it is Robertson that sort of almost dictates the play. And he, I think almost from the kickoff, is just careering, flying into the opposition. And it was actually from his side that the goal came. Now, you would expect, and I mean, Klopp's dropped him out a couple of times, hasn't he? And played a bit more defensively, played a more defensive left back. You would expect that Klopp in the City game tells Robertson to not go so quickly from the starting gun. I think funny enough, I think this game, so many times, I think there was a game between these two teams. I think it was played on New Year's Eve a couple of years ago, which is a great disappointment. I think it was 1-0 to Liverpool, and they both played well within themselves. I fancy the game that's coming up on Thursday, they're going to go at each other.
Well, City have to attack. City have to win, don't they? Draw's no good to City.
Well, I don't think Liverpool will go for it. I mean, they've obviously, on the counter-attack, they're very potent. They don't need too many chances now either, because the forward line are clicking better than they have done this season. But I just think you can recalibrate by taking Shaqiri out of that team and bringing another midfielder in who's slightly more defensive, not pushing the fullbacks on as much. And if Liverpool get a draw, that's perfectly fine. Yeah, and that'll be a similar performance to the one at Anfield, which with build is going to be this big attacking fest, and it wasn't.
But I think this could be... Sorry. But the difference, though, is that in that game, City didn't attack either. This is, it's not quite as the onus on City to attack is not quite as much as it was in the second leg of the Champions League last year. But it's a little bit like that. But City have to do something.
They'll have a go, but
and Liverpool are so perfectly set up to play on the break. I mean, even on Saturday, they only had 47% possession. You know, they totally dominated the game without having
Have the ball in the second half.
Yeah, so. Sure. Yeah.
A big fan of how much Socrates was complaining and continually complaining about a penalty, which did look like a penalty to me. Alan says, does Arsenal only have one more point at this time than last season? And everyone hated Wenger. Why does everyone love Emery?
I heard someone say this the other day that they couldn't understand how many games did they go unbeaten? Was it 20?
22. Something like that. 22 games.
Yeah. 22 games. How did that happen?
Europa League helped.
Yes, yes. But, I mean, you look at... I think one of the things is they've got defensive problems. Rob Holding's injury has actually been more of a serious problem than you might have expected at the start of this season. I was told, actually, that Mustafi was rushed back and we'll probably only last half the game. Well, that's it. He seems to be on some sort of job share with Koscielny at the moment. That's where Arsenal's problems lie. And those are problems inherited from Arsene Wenger. So Emery's got a lot. I mean, you've brought in players like Guendouzi. You've got Torreira, who didn't have a very good game, actually, at Anfield. But those players have improved. The strikers, who we've talked about a lot, didn't see much of the ball either. There's still an improving job to be done there. The problem is Wenger was going in the opposite direction as the one that Emery's going in right now.
Spurs 1, Wolves 3. Just when I wanted to believe a little bit. What was this, Jonathan? Complacency? Tiredness? Because they dominated the first half, didn't they?
They did.
Or will I get shouted out by Wolves fans for not giving them credit?
No, Wolves played really well. And I think we've seen... pretty consistently over the first half of the season that Wolves were a better side against better teams when they can sort of sit off and play on the break. That I think the chances they create when they play on the break are better chances than the chances they create when they're on top of teams. I sort of feel that Spurs have had this coming for a while. I think Spurs have sort of been scrambling through games, getting points. I mean, even against Burnley at home, it took a last minute goal. It keeps happening. They keep on doing just enough to get the win.
Although they did win 6-2 or 5-0 in the previous two games.
Yeah, used up all their goals, as you were saying on Twitter. That's definitely how it works, and we saw the proof of that. Their chances in the first half on Saturday, though, were pretty much all 25-yard shots. I don't know if that was a deliberate policy. That it seems that people have noticed Rui Patricio has an issue with that. So I don't know if they were just trying to create that type of chance. But I don't think... I mean, Kane didn't touch the ball in the box at all the entire game, did he?
No, that's true. And I think... I mean, Kane admitted after the game, so did Pochettino, that they were just tired. And they have got a pretty thin squad for where they are in the league. And it seemed very apparent in that second half because they were second to all the balls that in the first 10, 15 minutes they were getting to. They just look knackered, basically.
John, is it basically whenever Spurs lose, they will be called Spursy until they basically win a trophy, right? They win the league or the Champions League. I suspect it's got to be one of those two because otherwise everyone will just, as soon as they lose a game, social media will erupt with that.
I'm never that comfortable with the Spursy thing because they're a pretty good team and they're an under-resourced team who punch well above their weight. But it has to be said that something within the makeup of that team causes them to lose it at the point when they're putting in a title challenge. I mean, this happened 5 months ahead of the previous collapses, which would be the 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge, the defeat to West Ham the previous season. This time, you know, I mean, it was Jonathan Liu, wasn't it, that sent out that tweet that was, you know, RIP, forever in our hearts, the Spurs title challenge.
26 to the 12th,
2018 to 2020. And that pretty much, that is it for them, I would say.
Mm.
But we've no, I mean, come on, a team that buys no players in the summer, that is at second place at Christmas, has had a pretty good season, I'd say.
Also, they've not drawn too many games. They've won games and lost games.
Haven't drawn
any. No, that's it. They've lost five games now. And I think once you lose games, that's psychologically there. And Liverpool are benefiting massively by having not lost any. They could have lost at Chelsea and that would have affected them maybe like it's affected Spurs. City, you've seen what that one defeat's done to them at Chelsea. It's caused a wobble. And I think Spurs have got that in the back of their heads. That's the fifth defeat before New Year.
And no team's won the Premier League having lost more than six games. Now, Spurs maybe... Yeah, theoretically, you could get away with losing 7 or 8 because they haven't drawn any games. But if you're losing that many games, it means that there's some kind of problem there. That
yeah, I mean, they'd have to win the league. They'd have to win at Anfield and at the Etihad, which is
and they were
unprecedented.
Outplayed by both Liverpool and City in the games at Wembley.
How do we feel about Harry Kane's dive?
I thought he's a bit unlucky. I thought his foot was trodden on. I can't come with.
Did you see the kick after? The kick went whilst he was in the air, which. I don't think the referee saw, which is perhaps why he went down. He was trying to leap over the tackle and then he got caught in the air and that sent him down as well.
But are we just giving Harry Kane a pass because he's MBE, England's finest?
I think he should be stripped of the honours like Fred Goodwin was.
Just think, when somebody stands on your foot, the way you fall often looks a bit weird. It doesn't look like a normal trip because you're automatically catapulted higher. The fall is more vertical than horizontal because...
Are you trying to do an example there?
How many times do people tread on your foot? And then if someone treads on your foot, how often are you running and someone treads on your foot, Jonathan?
Well, I remember it happened...
Oh, God.
Croissant time.
Jonathan's done a monologue before on his bad feet, haven't you? It's a genetic thing or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I have to say, the orthopaedic implants have been unbelievable. They have made such a... The shape of my feet is so much more normal. Honestly, the inside of my feet is so straight, you could use them to as a ruler.
I mean, architects, you could sit in an architect's office with just your feet dangling over a desk.
The big lump.
Somebody get Wilson, please.
The big lump on the outside of my big toes have disappeared in 2 years. I broke a metatarsal before it was fashionable, and that was.
How did you do that? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have asked a question.
No, we don't need to go any further.
I got trodden on in the first minute of a game.
Okay.
Did you jump vertically?
Yeah. And the guy was sort of screaming at me, kind of because it looked ridiculous.
Did you play on?
Yeah, I dropped into to sweeper and we won the game 4-1.
The thing is, normally, if someone treads on your foot, even if they break it, you just hop, right? That's sort of the natural.
No, but I was moving, so you can't hop because your other leg, my right leg, was kind of going, was forward momentum.
Interesting. Didn't Kane hop into the air though and then land on the floor? That's why I saw it. And also, it hurts more when you get your foot trodden on one of these Premier League pitches because they're just rock hard, they're like concrete. There's nothing. There's no give underneath.
Southampton 1, Manchester City 3. Their title challenge is back on, John, isn't it? Zinchenko didn't have a great game.
Well, no, Pep Guardiola thinks he was the best player on the pitch.
Did he?
Yes, he said that because, I mean, the mistake that he made for Southampton's goal, scored by Hjorberg, fullback's a problem position for City, isn't it, considering they spent £800 million on fullbacks or whatever it is that Man United fans talk about. But he said that, you know, having made that mistake, Zinchenko came through, he supplied a goal himself for City. And that's the type of thing that Pep Guardiola, master man motivator, wants to see from his players. There's a line, isn't there, in that documentary? I can't repeat one of the words, but it's over. It's fucking over. And it's not over. I think City's still in this. But if you were Jurgen Klopp, you would see that they're perhaps a little bit nervy in front of goal and full-back, particularly the left-hand side, and Kyle Walker, who seems to have fallen out with, are big problems for Manchester City.
I thought Sterling was excellent yesterday.
Yeah, he was, yeah. It was a strange game, though, wasn't it? I mean, the 3-1 was probably about right in the end, but the goals didn't really come at the right point of the game.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a penalty when Ward-Prowse got in behind Zinchenko.
No, I agree with you. At first time you're seeing it, I thought that was an absolute stone wall, but I think the ref was right.
But then, yeah, the goal of putting back ahead was such a freakish goal that you still sort of think, see, a bit vulnerable. But
it doesn't seem right when when the ball goes in, but even the people on the pitch don't even notice that it's gone in. You know, I was watching that going, I just presumed it had gone behind.
Yeah, I mean, but I felt a bit sorry for the keeper as well, because it was in that sort of really awkward position where, you know, sort of right next to his hip, and he was a little bit unsighted by, was it Ramsey going across in front of him? And he couldn't have been expecting the ball to go there anyway, so he ended up looking quite bad, but I don't really think you could blame him.
Yeah, but I think he could have done a lot better with Aguero's header. I don't know if anyone...
I don't know, I thought it was a reasonable header, no?
I think McCarthy's a good goalkeeper, but every time I watch them play, there seems to be something like that goes on. Maybe it's just me that it's the curse, but I mean he's actually been quite decent, and he's got into the England reckoning and all the rest of it, so he must be okay. But these things do happen.
You get into the England reckoning as a goalkeeper if you play in any Premier League team now, though. It just seems to be the case. You have two games and you're suddenly being talked of as being third choice or something.
Unless you're Joe Hart, of course.
Well, yeah, of course, we know that.
You've had your time. look, even though they've lost two in a row, Southampton do look like a different team, don't they?
They've definitely improved under Hasenhüttl. Yeah, I mean, 1-2 and the other two games they could have got something out of, so yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about Southampton.
Did you see that? I forgive me whoever came up with this, but he does. Hasenhüttl looks like a cross between Glenn Hoddle and Tim Sherwood. He's sort of got Hoddle's hair,
right,
and a sort of chubbier Sherwood face.
Thankfully, he's not got the same managerial kind of tactics, I believe.
Well, Glenn would argue that he was a tactical masterplan. Go back to Rome in 1997, and you would see how
the glory of Le Tournoi.
The glory of Le Tournoi and a 0-0.
And, you know, let's not forget Tim Sherwood's win percentage at Tottenham, which I have forgotten. But I think it was 57%. Producer Jonathan points out that 93-94 was the last season that Spurs won at both Liverpool and Manchester City.
City wasn't City in 94, was it?
I think
Liverpool wasn't.
Maybe
Liverpool
it was City, it's not City anymore.
True.
I think Tottenham went 76 years without winning at Anfield. I think the first one was that they won on the day the Titanic sunk, and their next win was in 1986. So, never been the happiest of hunting grounds for them.
And Jonathan says, I think they've only won at Liverpool once since then. I can remember a cup win when Sheringham and Klinsmann both scored.
I'm pretty certain there's a league win, and Modric was absolutely immense in that game. Yeah, it was 2-0, I think they won.
Oh, he's a beautiful footballer, isn't he? Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll start at Old Trafford. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Most urgently, those Spurs scorers from 93-94 at Anfield. Spurs beat Liverpool 2-1. Nigel Clough on the score sheet for Liverpool. Sheringham got a brace, one from the penalty spot. And their 2-0 win at Main Road, courtesy of a brace from Jason Dazelle. So there you go. On the 21st of January at the Liberty Hall Theatre in Dublin, we're doing a live show. Me, Barry, Lars and TBC, or has it been announced? Can we announce it? We can announce it. Paolo Bandini joins us. Do come along. If you're coming on the 22nd, we'll make sure that show is better. And if you haven't bought tickets, you want to come on the 21st, we'll make sure that show is better. Old Trafford, Manchester United 4, Bournemouth 1. This is the first time Manchester United have scored 12 goals in three games since 2011. Stat courtesy of Richard Jolly. They're a different team, John Bruin, aren't they?
Yes. What could the difference be?
It'll be the manager, John.
Yes. Okay. Good point, Jonathan. it's almost all Solskjaer had to do was just do exactly the opposite to what Jose Mourinho did, and he's turned them into what actually looks quite a good team, full of talented players, playing with confidence, playing with freedom, playing as if they get on with each other. And it's amazing what that can do in the modern era. Now, we do live in this era of holistic management, with Gareth Southgate being so successful over the summer. But really, there was no need for Jose Mourinho to be manager of Manchester United, is what I feel and I've always felt. And watching that game, look at Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial. When Jose Mourinho took over, those were the two most talented players in the team that he took over. And they had to, we're doing it again, he had another job, they had a job share for them. And that job share was them sort of essentially locked to the left flank, not allowed to do anything else, left to fend for themselves, and never playing together at the same time. Now they're playing at the top of the game and playing superbly. The pass that Martial chipped in for that Rashford goal, you know, that's a player playing with confidence. Mm. And then, of course, Paul Pogba. Now, Paul Pogba, there's quite a few Manchester United fans that still hate him for the way he let down the manager and are concerned that he will one day turn his back on Manchester United because that's the kind of guy he is. But he looks like a player that was probably worth about 90 million quid at the moment.
Well, he might turn his back at some point, but this is just so... It's such a pleasure to watch them, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's so... It's just so markedly different. And you mentioned that outside of the right foot cross from Martial, that the skill of Rashford, Greg, to beat his man. So he turned Ake, and I can't remember who... I'm not sure who the guy he jinked past, but...
Of course, yeah.
That is just someone on the training ground just having fun.
Well, yeah, and... John's right in that the way Mourinho treated players like that and has done throughout his career, you can look at Joe Cole and Hazard and trying to restrain players who've got flair and who are at the best when they express themselves. It's something that Solskjaer is obviously aware of. These players just need to be let off the leash. Not to put a dampener on things, but I do think these are games that United should have won. And United beat Fulham 4-0 at home under Mourinho, so it's not... I do think there's greater tests ahead, and I think Solskjaer, it's great that he's being a good vibes man at the moment, but in terms of his tactics, we'll see, they'll be tested in bigger games to come. But I do think them having players happy and expressing themselves is going to cause bigger teams many more problems than Mourinho's negative tactics ever did.
I know your point about Pogba as well. He's much less likely to leave if he's having fun playing great football with people he appears to get on with.
Yes.
Yeah,
and played in a position that he likes playing in.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe how good he's been last two games. I mean, while taking Greg's point that it's three games they should be winning.
I mean, that headed goal that he scored, I mean, it's one of those things where the player you compare that to is Brian Robson. And Brian Robson is in that echelon of Manchester United players that cannot be questioned. But it was exactly that, you know.
It's a great run.
Yeah, you're in midfield and then you fight all the way through with it. That's almost like a Robbo style swing at the player as he went past. I think it was David Brooks, wasn't it? And then, you know, smash it home with a header. That's what Manchester United fans were brought up on.
I've also thought, watching Pogba while he's been at Manchester United, that he's always tried to do the difficult thing, right? He's always tried to do the glory ball. Every time he's got the ball, he's tried to keep the ball for too long. And in the last two games, he's just started to make the right decision.
Yeah.
Right? And that's so important. So there was a time when he was on a hat-trick running through, and I thought, well, he's definitely going to shoot now. And he slipped it through to Rashford, and I think Begovic made a save or something. But he's doing the right thing with the ball, which is totally key, because he's got everything in his locker, right?
I mean, that's partly confidence, right? But it's also partly the players are making the runs for him. They're giving them... the options. He's not having to try and hit 40-yard passes over four players or something.
And also, he doesn't have that voice in his head saying, don't do something stupid, is Jose Mourinho's voice.
It's an interesting point. I remember Jermaine Pennant years ago said that he just couldn't play for Liverpool under Benitez because he was getting his head packed with information.
Yeah.
And he had to just ignore that and just run to the byline and cross the ball into the box to Peter Crouch because he had to simplify it in his own head because he just wasn't able to compute what Benitez was telling him. And that's why he left.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to spend another hour slamming Jose, but you wonder if the days of the sort of disciplinarian manager are sort of, is that too far to go? It seems so obvious that if you make a group of people happy, they'll be better at whatever they're doing.
Disciplinarian and not make people unhappy though, right?
You can do the two things.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't think players...
Okay, maybe I picked the wrong word, but...
But, I mean, you know, players aren't going to be happy if, you know, a player wanders in 20 minutes late for training every day and there's no consequences. Or if a player never tracks back and gets away with it. You know, there's ways of addressing it, and there's ways of imposing that.
I think it's much more finite than it was, and it always was finite. I mean, sometimes you get Graeme Souness arrive at a club and then would turn around the discipline and then it would all fall apart when they'd fall out with Graeme Souness. But look at Antonio Conte at Chelsea. He's a disciplinarian. And that first season at Chelsea went like a dream, but they were exhausted by him and they with him by the second season. And Conte is a much more progressive than Mourinho, but it's a similar vibe. And do you know, you listen to, I mean, Alex Ferguson himself said that he realised after maybe 2001 that the hairdryer would have to be taken out of commission. Because players don't really listen to that, and they talk within themselves. They probably have WhatsApp groups. It's like, oh, did you see him today? It doesn't work anymore.
I listened to an interesting interview with Rotherham's manager, who Jonathan may have to look up his name for me. But he was talking this season about how young players in the last 10 years, you just can't be hard on them in the same way because you just don't get results from that. And he got all his players up and in front of the squad.
Paul Warne.
He's a very interesting character. And he got all the players up in front of each other and asked them to tell personal stories about you know, things they've had to overcome in their lives so that they were all more together and were able to take a little bit more criticism, understanding that these people are human beings and you know, they've got backstories and they can't just be, you know, kind of taken to the cleaners and not be affected by it. And I think there's definitely that's happening in modern day football now. I'm sure when Guardiola and Klopp give players a roasting on the training pitch or you know, in a match afterwards, as Guardiola did with Zinchenko, they talk positively about them and know that they've got to kind of give them something back. I'm not sure Mourinho did that.
No, it's sort of caring.
The cold shoulder was there, and maybe it was hard to bridge that you know, that chasm afterwards after they'd been harsh on a player.
Eric Bailly's ridiculous sending off means he goes level with Dennis Law and Wayne Rooney on 3 red cards. This is another stat from Richard Jolly. 37.5% of Manchester United red cards have been shown to Eric's. Fulham 1, Huddersfield 0. That penalty was fun, wasn't it, Jonathan?
Well, I don't think Claudio Ranieri thought it was fun. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that anywhere near a professional pitch.
I mean, I've seen Neymar,
debates,
Cavani,
but
I've never seen
De La Feu did that as well, I think, at Everton.
But not quite.
No,
so.
It was, what's he called?
The other one.
come on, we can get it.
It begins with M, doesn't it?
Oh, who was the one?
Belgian.
Yes, a Belgian.
Oh, God. Morales.
Morales.
Yeah.
Did it, yeah.
Oh, yes, Gary Neville's seething rage in the TV studio after that.
Well, if you miss it, it just becomes so much worse, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I still don't think quite such anger from one player, yeah, being told by everybody else on the pitch, it's not yours, mate.
I suppose I've never seen it quite so cut and dried that literally nobody wanted him to take that penalty. I mean, I know he scored one at Old Trafford, but perhaps he's just been ballooning them in training so much. Mitrovic is so good at them. I know before the game, you know who's on penalties, right?
Also, Mitrovic isn't the kind of character I thought you'd want to mess with. No. You know, like, he looks quite an imposing figure, and he must have some balls on him to do that to Mitrovic and to the squad, and it's such an important game, and then to go and miss it. I can understand why he was so happy when Mitrovic scored, because he got him out of jail, didn't he?
Yeah, although when Mitrovic scored, you watch the celebration, he sheepishly comes up at the end, doesn't he? He's not right in the middle. He must have spent that you know, however many minutes, just thinking, oh God.
Talking of imposing figures, Claudio Ranieri's mask dropped in the post match.
Yeah.
I think he said, I will kill him.
I will kill him. Yeah.
And it was this sort of smiling assassin look, and it was thinking, okay, this is perhaps lifts a little on, you know, Claudio.
Mm. Interesting to see whether he drops him in the next game.
I thought we were going to see whether he kills him.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was just not anywhere near the squad. Met police are got in touch.
Fulham absentees, Kamara, yeah. Brackets, murdered.
Well, honestly, I could see he's probably lucky January is so close.
Yeah. Huddersfield are done, do we think?
Yeah, they just can't score goals. I mean, that's against Fulham's defence as well, and they just didn't threaten at all. I think if you look at Fulham, Mitrovic is a striker who he's playing well for them, and he'd probably get into double figures. And I think if you're one of those teams at the bottom, if you've got a striker who you can, you're hopeful he's going to get into double figures, that's going to win you a few games. And I think Fulham have got one in Mitrovic. I think Newcastle have got another maybe in Rondon, and they're that's hope for those teams, I think.
Obviously sad for Huddersfield fans if Huddersfield go down. Is it sad for anyone else? You know, it's a lovely journey. It was nice to see Patrick Stewart cheering in the crowd.
Well, it's good to have a Yorkshire team, a Yorkshire presence in the Premier League. I mean, Leeds or I guess Sheffield United may well replace them. I think it's just bad for the league if it becomes concentrated in just London and the North West. So it's bad in that point of view. But I mean, realistically, Huddersfield, every season they have in the Premier League is a bonus for them. They're not a natural Premier League club for all that they did in the 1920s.
Croissant time.
Tick, that's one. Huddersfield fans know that kind of they have absolutely no divine right to be in the top flight. And if they go down, well, they're going back to the league where it's probably their natural status.
Which of their players would be in the Premier League next season? That's a question you've got to ask.
Aaron Moy.
Moy, Philip Billing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're doing a Sporkle quiz in 10 years' time and you have to name Huddersfield's top three Premier League scorers, are any of us going to get any of them?
Bearing in mind we weren't very good at it about 30 seconds ago. Another side that will be happy to just stay in the Premier League are Cardiff. And at the moment, looks like they might well do. I mean, ludicrous of Leicester to beat Chelsea and City and then lose to Cardiff. But are we overlooking the job that Neil Warnock is doing?
I think maybe we are. They've been brilliant, haven't they? I thought they had absolutely no chance at the start of the season. I basically thought them and Huddersfield were down plus one other. But they've won four of the last six at home, I think, and that, then their first away win. And I think they appear to deserve it. Okay, got lucky with a penalty, maybe. They've been producing great defensive performances and doing enough going forward.
And Warnock's got it exactly right. The only thing they can do is soak up pressure, because I think most of the squads in the Premier League are better than theirs. The players can keep the ball better than theirs, so they have to soak up pressure and hit players on the break and hit teams on the break, and they're doing that. And he was right to say as well that they don't have any pressure on them, which is a massive bonus for them compared to some of the other teams. Newcastle, Southampton, Fulham, Burnley, Palace probably all feel like they should perhaps stay up, and Cardiff don't. So,
and I wonder if Huddersfield do a bit because they were there last year, right? You have a different sort of pressure. We did this last year, so we should be able to do it again. Is a different
perhaps,
thing.
But I think those other five teams there would probably want to stay up. Fulham, just because they were talked up coming into it, and they've got to
spend a lot of money as well.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Neil Etheridge was a good save. Duo said, would Max have Neil Etheridge in goal rather than Alisson? Because Etheridge wears long sleeves and Alisson doesn't, and I don't trust goalkeepers with short sleeves. I know after I first said it, people pointed out goalkeepers who've done reasonably well, like Buffon, Casillas. Say again?
Bartes. Or
well, yeah, that sort of plays into my argument.
Like, well, maybe, yeah.
Anyway, look, he played very well. Not at the Asia Cup, but he is from the Philippines.
But I find this weird. Like, why is he suddenly allowed to just skip a tournament? Do people in the Philippines not up in arms about this? It seems as Sven Erik's just gone, I understand he's quite important for Cardiff, so you keep him. If he's important for Cardiff, be really, really important for the Philippines.
He's not from the Philippines, he's from Enfield.
He is from Enfield,
He's either Philippines international or he's not. Once you make that decision, you have a commitment to that country. And I think he's let down the people of the Philippines. And I don't think the Philippines Asian Cup campaign should be sacrificed on the altar of Cardiff maybe staying in the Premier League.
I think he should bang the desk now.
We should say, after that penalty, I mean, the tackle from Sol Bamba is absolutely incredible. Like, the desire to get there. And not only that, Sol Bamba did a block a bit later where he sort of got on all fours.
That was amazing. I don't know how he blocked it, but it was kind of what Torreira wanted to do, I think, but kind of slipped before he did it.
What's happened to Sol Bamba's accent, though? Because he's lost all traces of Fife from his accent. It used to be very pronounced.
Did it?
Yeah.
So what happens? Like, you go up north and you get very Macam for a bit and come back and get all posh.
Your Macam's accent's gone in about 3 days.
Yeah, it was very strong on St. Catharines because I'd been up there for like a month. It was oscillating all over the place on St. Catharines.
That's a good way to differentiate. When you're on there, you can go Macam, and when you're on here, you can A great finish from Victor Camarasa, wasn't it? And well done to Cardiff. Burnley 2, West Ham 0. 19-year-old Dwight McNeil scoring his first goal for the club, one of five changes. Tom Heaton came in for Joe Hart. Lots of people have been suggesting that was quite a good idea, and he made a brilliant save from Andy Carroll. So this was really important, John.
Yeah, and the Burnley fans were singing for Tom Heaton. The chant was Heaton, which is, you know,
it's a pretty good one. Almost as good as the Cambridge fans, ooh, Gary Rowett.
Yeah,
at least we put an ooh there.
And but he made a great save, and also his headed clearance set up one of the goals as well. Poor Joe Hart, poor Joe Hart, conceded the most goals in the Premier League still, actually faced the most shots. Sean Dyche was talking fairly unconvincingly about what a great professional and great guy is. I'm sure he is a great guy, but he just, you know, Tom Heaton was the bedrock of that team for so long until he got injured, did his shoulder against Crystal Palace last year. Nick Pope came in. Joe Hart's had an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, I really hope there's some kind of redemption for Joe Hart somewhere.
Because it's been a long time now.
Age sort of 38 or something, playing for kind of, I don't know.
Do you think for Yedding in the FA Cup round or something?
He'll turn up for...
At the Etihad.
Yeah.
And, play a blinder, score a header in the last minute to win it.
He's only 31. I mean, he could turn it around.
He's 31, old for a goalkeeper now.
But as you say, he's faced the most shots. It's not just, you know, he's been in front of a porous defence. The relationship between the defence and the keeper is a thing, right? I mean,
but Burnley have also conceded the most goals from long range as well. The stats are okay. He's had a lot to do, but he's not done it that well. That's the problem.
He hasn't been as awful as he's been. I know the bar's set quite low, but he hasn't been as awful as he has been in the past at Burnley, I don't think, given what he's faced.
Palace 0, Chelsea 1. This was boring. I really feel this. I know there are a couple of exceptions, but I'm convinced that any game that kicks off at midday will be bad. I mean, I think United won a game 6-1 and it was very exciting.
Arsenal are bad at lunchtime kickoffs, I think.
I just think no one's ready. The fans aren't ready. The players aren't ready.
Selhurst Park as well. It's just something about getting to Selhurst Park. It's easy for me to get to Macclesfield than it is to Selhurst Park. It's there's something about that place. And a sort of
Sunderland got relegated there in 97. It was one of the bleakest days of my life because it's such an energy-sapping ground, Selhurst Park.
Yeah. I've been sick in the toilets at Selhurst Park.
Wow, I mean,
did you get travel sick on the way? Is that what it was?
It was something like that, yeah.
a lot's been made of N'Golo Kante and where he plays, but he took that goal like a centre forward, didn't he?
Yeah. Lovely chest control, good turn. Kept it low.
Giroud left on crutches. He scored two disallowed goals. Wakefield Neil says, read the non-Giroud double. Whatever happened to the offside rule change a few years ago that the benefit of the doubt should go to the striker? Would have livened up another dull early game. Palace might have tried attacking.
Yeah, I don't know why they got rid of that, because I quite like that, because it did shut up a lot of kind of annoying debates where linesmen are supposed to be able to kind of...
Have they stopped it?
I'd say there's been a few examples recently where I think maybe the striker has got the advantage, where there's just a toe sticking out. I mean, like, to the officially offside, but they're not quite as hardline as they used to be, I don't think. Or maybe the game's faster and they just can't see it.
I think a linesman's guessing when he's doing that. You can't. That's why I think the law that they used to have, that there had to be, basically, if any part of your body was onside, you were onside, because that then just gives linesmen so much more leeway.
Yeah, I prefer that. When it's just a toe, I think, crack on.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Until the moment when all players have a sensor, I don't know, in their badge or in their right foot or whatever, and we can automate these things, I don't know.
Time for your croissant, Greg. Will asks, for Jonathan, whatever happened to three at the back? Was it just a reactionary fad? Was it popular just because Chelsea won the league using it?
It's still about. I think it's sort of just been accepted now that a lot of teams... switch between a back four and a back three. I mean, City have played with a back three at times this season. United have played with a back three. Arsenal have played with a back three. Liverpool haven't. But it's still there. It's just that, you know, no major team is maybe using it as their default formation this season. But it hasn't gone away.
Is there an argument that sometimes it's often used as a transitional thing when
centre mids drop into.
Well, no, I just mean when it's not working with four at the back, they think, let's just change this around. We'll try three at the back. We'll push the wing backs on, and then they often run with it for as long as it's successful, and then as soon as it falls apart, then it's back to four. Because
I think one of the problems with it as a long term strategy is you have to set up your squad to be for that, which means you have to have a lot of centre backs there. And then if you then go to a back four, you're suddenly left with, you know, a load of spare centre-backs who aren't going to get a game.
And wing-back is quite a specific position as well, isn't it?
Yeah, although I suspect the majority of modern full-backs are okay, more equipped to do it than they would have been, say, 20 years ago. I think, you know, the attacking nature of the modern fullback means that they're more comfortable with it. But yeah, it is a different position. You do have to learn it.
Surely Juventus have done it for the longest out of any team and
any
been successful.
Any top team, definitely, I'd say. And what I do think is remains true is if you're playing a 3-4-2-1, I think those two occupied positions on the pitch naturally are very hard for opponents to pick up. So I think maybe if you're struggling to get the balance right between attack and defence, it's a way of getting seven potentially defensive outfielders on the pitch and having your two creators in positions where they can cause damage. And that's what Conte did in this first season, right? And teams didn't know how to react to that. And Brendan Rodgers had done it briefly at Liverpool. He learned it from Paulo Sousa at Basel. It was a Champions League game or Europa League game between Basel and Liverpool.
New Year's Day is tomorrow.
Weird Paulo Sousa klaxon on your laptop.
Yes, I have it. It's very rarely used. It cost £3,000, but I really wanted it.
I thought that was a sound effect for Brendan Rodgers' brain.
Anyway, whatever you were saying, Brighton 1, Everton 0. The gap between Brighton just 4 points off Wolves in the race for the Everton Cup.
6 points ahead of Palace now.
Yeah.
And so they're 13th, Palace are 14th. And that's a divide in the league now, I would say, and between those who are in the relegation scrap and those who are going to finish mid-table.
And in the same way that we haven't given Neil Warnock enough credit, we spend a lot of time giving Eddie Howe credit, and perhaps we should take some of our Howe credit and give it to Chris Hughton.
Well, the home record that they have, I think they've lost to Spurs and Chelsea in home games, but against all the teams around them, they haven't lost, and they've won a lot of those games. And I think that's so important when you're a team who is probably trying to stay up rather than, you know, reach the Europa League. And he's done that. And I'm sure if they do it again in the second half of the season, win four or five of the home games against teams around them, they'll comfortably survive. And
the tweeting seagull makes this point about the home record, saying as Brighton currently have the best home record outside the top six, is the Amex the new tough place to go in the Premier League? It doesn't have the same ring. You know, can they do it on a cold Tuesday night in Brighton?
It's quite hard to get there as well by train. You've got to go to Falmer, and then you actually have a choice. You can go either way out of Falmer to get back to London. But I have to say, I find it hard to get to.
Well, that's important insight.
Well, you know, yeah, it's like...
It's easier than Sellers Park, though.
Not for me. Sellers Park's fine for me. Didn't used to be the case when I lived somewhere else.
Yeah.
I once lived in Hackney and worked in Falmer and had to travel
from Hackney to Falmer on a
magazine, and I had to go down there and come back every day, and you're right, it's soul sapping.
That could possibly be the last time in 2018 where producer Jonathan has his head in his hands for this pod, but hey, we've still got a good 15 minutes left. So what are Everton, John? Smashed by Spurs, smashed Burnley, lose here. What are they?
I was chatting to my good friend over Christmas, who's an Everton fan, and...
John Parrott?
No, his name's Andrew Jackson, okay. Not the... Okay.
Former US president?
No. Actually, talking about US presidents, you mentioned Neil Etheridge. He saved a penalty from three US presidents this season.
Carter?
Jimmy Carter doesn't play in the Premier League anymore.
What's his name? Trump? Judge Trump, the snooker player.
Judge Trump.
Who's left? Reagan?
No.
Clinton?
No.
Kennedy?
Kennedy, yes.
Spelled differently, but...
Garfield?
First day of the season, yeah.
Roosevelt?
No.
There's no Bush, is there?
Well, one of them sat here.
Wilson?
Yes.
Rutherford B. Hayes?
Ulysses Grant?
No,
Chester
no,
Arthur?
No, Calvin Coolidge didn't take one either. But, and of course...
Which club?
Johnson?
Leicester, Madison.
Oh, God, yes. Yesterday or 2 days ago. A great trivia quiz, though.
Sorry. So my friend Andrew Jackson, not the American president, he said, yeah, he's a Goodison season ticket holder, and he said that, you know, essentially that the fans and the football is better than it was under Sam Allardyce. That's not the highest of watermarks to climb above, and they're unsure about Silver. And you look, and also, they look at Silver's career, and
it's exactly the same number of points after 20 games as they had under Allardyce this season.
Yeah, well, it was Allardyce.
Allardyce Koeman, plus Koeman.
I'd say minus Koeman.
So yeah, again, you go back to the Emery comparison. There's a progression there, but you're not really sure what the progression is. And the question you asked is the question you have to ask about Everton. What are they? We don't know yet.
Watford 1, Newcastle 1. As you said, Solomon Rondon is...
I really like Rondon. Yeah. I really wish he didn't play for Newcastle. It'd make him even easier to like. But I saw him playing with Venezuela in Copa America in 2011. Have you finished your croissant yet, or should I keep going?
Crack on.
And
it's like Radio 4 sound effects department there.
I really liked him then because he played sort of 50 yards many of the rest of his team, just holding the ball up, winning throw-ins, winning free kicks. And I've sort of kept an eye on him since because I just liked his attitude, liked the way he played. And I thought I was a bit disappointed by what happened to him at West Brom. He didn't really kind of hit the heights, but some of those headers he scored this season.
Mm. Seems amazing you'd ever pick Josselu over Rondon.
That must have been to rest Rondon's legs. Justin's never scored an away goal, for Newcastle.
Also, they were playing Liverpool at Anfield. It's like, why waste Rondon's kind of energy?
But there was two decent crosses from the wide player plays for Newcastle.
Matt Ritchie.
Matt Ritchie, yes. But you thought Rondon might have gotten the end of in that game.
But even still, if you're going to... If you've got a target, at least, if you're going to be clearing it quite a lot, I mean, he's not the most mobile, but he could.
Rafa's using him in the games that he thinks he can get something from them, and probably quite rightly.
Karen.
It wasn't the best cross in the game, though, Matt Ritchie's. The De La Feu cross for Decore's goal was so good. Yeah. So good. It just absolutely arrowed onto his head.
Rumours of Decore to PSG. Is he that good?
He's been very good. I've seen him this season, yeah.
They absolutely love him at Vicarage Row, don't they? He's their favourite player.
And he was on the bench, which sort of sparked some more rumours.
Yeah.
Premier League news. Susanna Dynage this is a statement from the Premier League, has now advised the nominations committee she will not be taking up the position of chief executive. It carries on. The committee has reconvened its search and is talking to candidates. There will be no further comment until an appointment is made. She'd agreed to replace Richard Scudamore in November. This is Dan Rowan from the BBC. Tweeted out yesterday she'd apparently reflected in recent weeks and decided she wanted to stay in broadcasting at Discovery. And he was told the precise start date wasn't set, and the Premier League have an acting CEO, Richard Masters, and a chair, Claudia Arney, will hold the fort, but it is a shock and will be seen as a major embarrassment. Will it be seen as a major embarrassment if someone changes their mind on something?
It's football administration.
Who cares? Really?
I don't care about it. And yeah, so what?
I mean,
I don't know why everybody gets so excited
thing.
About it.
In Scudamore was such a big figure for so long. But does anybody outside of the Dinage family, the Dynage family, really know what she's like? Do we know if she'd be good? No, not a clue. So it.
Presumably the people that interviewed her for the job came up with a theory that she might be good, and she has a very strong reputation in television, and
to the wider public. So in terms of being an embarrassment,
I don't know.
I suppose it all depends on if anything else comes out about
the job. And depends who now gets appointed.
Although you're not allowed to change your mind about anything these days. If you say, I thought one thing, I now think something else, just not allowed. There we are. All right, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll start with the Football League. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly, the Football League. The Championship is very exciting. Top two both lost. Leeds ending a seven-game winning streak. They went now 2-0 at home to Hull. Did anybody see the quite terrible... the Hull fans sing "You're Getting Mauled by the Tigers" and do a kind of grrr with their hat. I'm doing it, you know. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, like it's whole crowd are going, grrr, "You're getting mauled by the Tigers." That seems slightly sexual, perhaps, for some people.
Is this a new thing? Because I've been to Hull an awful lot in my previous employers.
You've never seen
that. Send me there all the time, in fact. But maybe they just saw them lose every time.
I just can't imagine old school Hull fans going, "Yeah, this is a really good."
Yeah, who's the first fan who stands up and does that and expects everyone else to join in? And maybe with utter bafflement realises that they have.
Funny place, Hull. You can never count on it.
There are four wins in a row for Hull. Are they starting in the relegation zone? They're up to 14th now. Norwich lost 4-3 at home to Derby. They conceded a 92nd minute winner. One floodlight failed when they were 3-2 up. In the 82nd minute, I think all the players had to go off and come back on again for the last few minutes. Great thing about a floodlight failure, isn't it? Is the floodlights go off and you all go, "Hooray!" And then you go, "Oh, shit." Some sample scorelines of Norwich's last 18 games. 4-3 win at Wickham, 4-0 win at Sheffield Wednesday, 4-3 win at home to Millwall, a game they were behind in twice, 4-1 win at Swansea, 3-2 last minute win over Bolton, 3-3 draw with Forest, that amazing comeback from 3-0 down. So, yeah, fun if you're a Norwich fan.
I was in a railway station in, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in India.
Mm-hmm,
in,
of course.
96.
Okay.
All the lights went out. And me and my mate both automatically went, "Way!" And nobody else in the room did.
Okay.
And you stuck there for 36 hours or...?
Well, we're stuck there for a while, yeah.
I mean, that was, tenuous at best.
Yes.
Even for your standards, Wilson.
And your pricks.
Places where you've been where the lights have gone off. I mean, anyway, in League One, Portsmouth are still top. They won 5-2 at Fleetwood. Luton and Sunderland behind them both drew. Bristol Rovers
won. Sunderland have been really bad recently.
Have they?
Yeah, I was at the Bristol Rovers game. We beat them 2-1. I was at the Bradford game on Boxing Day. Very lucky to win those two games. No, they're not playing well at the minute. I'm worried.
How you go more Mackham when you're talking about Sunderland. Bristol Rovers won 2-0 away at Oxford. They've taken 9 points from their three games so far with caretaker manager Graham Coughlin in charge. And in League Two, 7 draws, including 5 goalless ones. That's why we love League Two. Lincoln, the leaders, the only team in the top 7 to win. Very lucky at Cambridge. We took the lead and then we hit the bar and then we let in 2 goals in 2 minutes. Bollocks. Lincoln extend their advantage at the top to 6 points. Grimsby and Carlisle both on good runs, both on 4-game winning streaks. Both climbed 5 places in those 4 games, with Carlisle scoring 15 goals. 1 goal every 24 minutes. Macclesfield doing all right at the bottom, aren't they, John?
Well, they lost, but...
They're back in the race.
The spirit is raised by Sol, yes.
Mm. I hope he's a massive failure, because...
Because it endangers Cambridge.
Absolutely. Okay. That's not because I hate Sol Campbell. Full EFL fixture list on Tuesday, which is January the 1st, which is tomorrow. Enjoy your retirement, John Still. He stepped down as Barnet boss, will retire from football management after 42 years. The 68-year-old began managing non-league Leytonstone in 1976. Ends his third spell at Barnet. They are 15th in the National League, but he's becoming the director of football. So,
is that Martin Allen's going to be back in there then?
We presume so.
37th stint.
I think it's Darren Curry, who is another Barnet mainstay. I've actually interviewed John Still years ago. One of the game's great characters.
Should we read between the lines?
No, he's fine. Yeah, he's a good laugh.
Okay, good. Yeah. Fit Bar, the Old Firm Derby. Rangers' first Old Firm win since 2012. Stephen Gerrard said that's the best we've played. Brendan Rodgers said we didn't play well, we made too many mistakes, I've got no excuses.
Rangers were good first time, yeah, they really enjoyed that game.
Craig Gordon made a lot of saves, but I mean Rangers, I mean it's a cliche, isn't it, and you wonder if it matters at this level, but it just looked like they really wanted it more than Celtic.
But that's it, they've not got as many talented players as Celtic have, but there's been at times this season when they've got results that they didn't really have any right to get. I mean, they had 10 men against Villarreal, who were a much better side than them. They managed to draw 0-0, and I think Gerrard realises that he hasn't got as many talented players as Celtic, and he's making them work extra hard for him. I think it's a massive bonus having Ryan Kent. It looks like he's going to get back to full fitness now. He's on loan from Liverpool, who's... They lack much creativity, and I think him being on the pitch against Celtic gave him a little bit more nous than they've had in a lot of games. And yeah, I think Gerrard is doing a decent job there. And at the end of the season, I'm sure because of his standing, if other players can see that he's actually can manage a bit, then he's a name and they'll be attracted to Rangers as a club to go to and maybe be able to compete with Celtic more. And it felt like in this game, it kind of announced Rangers back as a realistic rival to Celtic. And it's a very interesting title racing.
Isn't it as well? Because Kilmarnock and Aberdeen both won, and they're... What, 2 points and 3 points behind Rangers and Celtic?
Hearts won, who were leading early on in the season. They're still only 6 points behind, probably a little bit too far. But that's five teams who, I mean, four realistically are in the title race, five perhaps. And they've all kind of taken points off each other. So it's a very interesting title race.
I've watched Rangers a little bit this season, and I think Steven Gerrard, I've always found him an enigmatic figure. He never really gave much away, but... Seeing him managing, you see how Steven Gerrard is, much more than you ever did at Liverpool. Like, he's demonstrative, and I think during the press conference, he started intervening. I think it was either Ryan Kent or Ryan Jack, and he shouted out, "You were shit hot." You know, it's like this motivator guy.
Saw some of that towards the end of his Liverpool career. In 2014, the title running, I thought this
does not slip.
Well, yeah, but regardless of what happened with him,
but he
talking to the press afterwards. He was shutting down journalists who were asking questions that he didn't like, and he's done that here. And he's obviously very protective of his players, and I think that makes them like him.
He's like a motivator. He's not really a disciplinarian in the way that we've dismissed today, but there is that edge of. The holistic manager as well.
He's very...
He's on their side.
He's got a really earnest... Yeah. You know, afterwards you could imagine him being sort of smiley and up, but he was just... Yeah, he's... I think he just... I sense he feels he's got to come across as really taking this seriously. I mean, he probably is taking it seriously.
And he is as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
And look, fair play to him. We should point out the absolute tremendous drop ball between Scott Brown and Scott Arfield. Scott Arfield is literally jumping up and down like he's just about to start a game of Street Fighter 2. He was like Ken in Street Fighter 2. He was just there bobbing up and down.
I haven't seen a drop ball competed like that for like 20 years.
And the ball bounced like mid-stomach.
Yeah. Ball was essentially completely irrelevant in that, wasn't it?
I like the fact both those are called Scott as well. Yeah. To emphasise, this is the heart of Scottish football.
Scott Brown had an absolute stinker, and Rangers made him look like older than he actually is. And he's already about 87.
He's 33, but...
Yeah.
Jesus.
But in like whatever, you know, footballer years, he's much older.
Well, that was his 115th Old Firm derby, so... You know.
But it's quite simple. Because he has historically in those games run them, you know, he's bossed those games.
In that game, he was about a minute late to every challenge, I think,
which is 30 seconds later than he normally is, I presume. Interesting title race north of the border. From Scotland, let's go to Italy and say hello to Paolo Bandini. Paolo, good morning.
Good morning.
Juventus 9 points clear. They beat Sampdoria 2-1. Both goals from Cristiano Ronaldo. They're basically the best team in Italy, aren't they, by a country mile?
Yeah, they are. It shouldn't really surprise us, because there's only one team in Italy who can go out and drop 100 million euros on Cristiano Ronaldo in the summer. At the moment, Napoli are still on course for 88 points this season. It's hardly a terrible total, but Juventus are on course for 106, and that's the reality of where they are relative to most of the country at the moment. I mean, this was actually quite a close game this weekend against Sampdoria. It was, we all thought it had finished 2-2, and then there was a lengthy VAR review at the end of the game which ruled correctly that Ricky Saponara had been offside in a build-up to the final goal. Perhaps more questionable was the also VAR-awarded penalty which Juventus took the lead with. And in fact, you could also argue about the penalty that Sampdoria got before that as well. So there was a lot of VAR in this game, and it was, you know, it's worth saying, it was a tight game. Sampdoria, one of those teams who played them pretty well this season. But in broader terms, Juventus are a mile ahead, and they're a mile ahead sort of what's perhaps most worrying for the rest of the Serie A about that is they're a mile ahead whilst not necessarily playing that great. This wasn't a Vince performance. We haven't seen them play that great in a few weeks. But again, when you've got Ronaldo, Mario Mandzukic, Paulo Dybala, all these players who can make a difference for you, they tend to make a difference.
In Italy, are there lots of questions about, you know, how it's such a, you know, it's a one-team league and how it's going to you know, what, how do we keep the interest? There's 21 points between first and fourth place.
Yeah, and I always feel compelled to sort of point out in the one-team league conversation that whilst it is seven titles in a row, last season at least, Napoli really did push Juventus very, very hard. They were 1 point behind after beating them in April. That was a real title challenge last season. I'm not certain we're going to get that this year. The gap, as you say, to fourth is enormous. And of course, there's frustration in Italy about it. I think it's the same as in any country when the same results play out over and over again. People get bored, people get frustrated, people get tired of it and want to switch off, although actually attendance is slightly up this year. The issue is it's not Juventus's problem to correct, is it? It's not for them to say, oh, we're too good and we need to do something about it. I mean, up until this Ronaldo signing, they've actually run themselves pretty sensibly from a financial standpoint. This was a gamble, and they believe it'll pay out as a financial gamble to spend as much money on him. But actually, you know, they tend to run a pretty tight ship. They did post slight losses on their accounts last year, but we're talking 19 million euros, which in the scheme of what a club like Juventus makes isn't too dramatic. Yes, it is for someone else to come and prove that they can, I don't know, run at the same pace. And everyone knows, I think, in Italy that really there are only a small handful of clubs that are structurally set up to do it in terms of being able to generate the turnover, spend the money that's required to keep up. And those are Inter and Milan, first and foremost. And Inter did spend this summer. They did go out and get Reggio Nainggolan, and they have got a substantial wage bill. They were supposed to be closer. They're the team I think people are probably most disappointed with because they're 14 points behind. And yes, they're going to finish in the top four, which is the most important thing for them at this point of their progress financially. And you know, they are operating under financial fair play restrictions already, so they do need to have that Champions League money. But nevertheless, I think people were hoping that they would be closer to challenging than they are. And Milan obviously are another step behind in that process. So there is a limited pool of clubs realistically that can expect to sort of year on year challenge them. Juventus have been very well run, and that needs to be said as well. The fact of having that money doesn't guarantee you the success. They've made lots of astute business decisions. They've been forward thinking in Italy, obviously in terms of the stadium, but also in terms of the commercial deals they've made. They've run themselves very well as a club, and again, it's not really on them to fix it. But of course, it's frustrating not to be at the halfway point of the season, because it's only the halfway point, and to look at it and think, well, there's not a title race there. There's barely even a race for the Champions League places. I mean, Napoli and Inter are both sort of cruising towards top four finish at the moment, which means there's really just one spot left for Lazio, Milan, Roma and a few others to contest. So it is unfortunately looking like the second half of the season isn't going to be at the moment wildly competitive.
But we're halfway through the season and Chievo won their first game.
They did. It was against Frosinone, the team immediately above them in the table. Frosinone did finish the game on 10 men as well, but a win is a win, and they have won. So yes, they're still last, but slightly closer now than before. And look, they actually haven't lost a lot of games recently, Kiev, but they've been drawing a bunch. So the way things are in that lower part of the table, it's not impossible yet for them to find a way out and avoid relegation this season.
Paolo, have a lovely new year.
You too.
I meant that more sort of New Year's Eve. Everyone, not just new. I will see Paolo in the whole of 2019, I imagine. Premier League fixtures tomorrow: Everton, Leicester, Arsenal, Fulham, and Cardiff, Spurs. On Wednesday, Bournemouth, Watford, Chelsea, Southampton, Huddersfield, Burnley, big one at the bottom, West Ham, Brighton, Wolves, Palace, Newcastle, Manchester United, and then it all builds up to Manchester City, Liverpool on the 3rd. An important pod achievement, everybody. Kelly says, thank you to the Guardian Football Weekly for enabling me to get one question on this year's Big Fat Quiz. The Jimmy Carr Channel 4 one had a question about West Brom's mascot being a boiler. And because we referenced that solidly for about 10 weeks, she got that. Adam says, what one footballing cliche would you like to ban for 2019? I'm happy to go first. The one that annoys me the most is pundits and broadcasters trying to, and I've said it before, trying to ingratiate themselves with a club by saying, oh, they've got some really intelligent fans. They're really, you know, because, I mean, everyone's been to a football match and some people there are smart and some aren't, right? You know, you've got some Rotherham, really smart. You never ever go, yeah, but Crawley, stupid fans.
The one I'd say is commentator saying it's unusually quiet here today. You know, at matches when generally Premier League matches are, they're not raucous from the very start, or maybe after 2 minutes it goes quite quiet. It's just, you know,
It's usually quiet.
It's usually quiet here. Yeah, it's unusually atmospheric here today.
Tom?
Mine's a phrase, which is when it seems they say, always say, they can go on and win the league. Why can't they just win the league?
I think my dad very much hates at this moment in time because, well, obviously it's in time, you know.
So. Well, a lot of your imported managers say in this moment in the press conference.
Although I am a big fan of people saying of football when they say Sadio Berahino hasn't scored in 1,721 minutes of football. I mean, what else? What else? Wilson, anything? It's all right. You've said a lot on today's pod. That'll do for today. Greg, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
John, thank you.
Thank you, Max.
I've got to go, but I'll just keep it rolling and you can come out with it.
What? I don't like the knee-jerk blaming of zonal marking at corners.
Oh, no. There we go. Hey. Right, we'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.